Hi, and welcome to this edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health. Our mission here at Fresh Hope for Mental Health is to empower you to live well in spite of your mental health challenge by sharing insights through interviews, practical tools for living well, encouragement and courage for overcoming all from a Christian perspective. And now, here's your host, Pastor Brad Hayes.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to this edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health. I'm Brad Hafes, your host. Our purpose here on Fresh Hope for Mental Health is to empower you to live a faith-filled, rich, and full life in spite of having a mental health diagnosis. Today on our podcast, we have Reverend Jermaine D. Alberti. He's the executive director of a ministry called Pathways in the St. Louis area, and he has a rich variety and depth of experience, and he's worked for over 20 years in nonprofit faith communities, mental health, and government serving in the roles as a community organizer, working with different faith traditions, training director for a community mental health center. Gosh, the list goes on and on. And we're just blessed to have him today on our podcast. Jermaine, welcome to Fresh Hope for Mental Health.
Well, thanks for the invitation. It's good to be here.
Folks, this guy and I could talk all day, probably, about all kinds of things, and we've been able to meet in person and spend a little time together down in San Antonio a year ago, and then saw you just recently. Didn't get to really talk to you much there at the conference in San Antonio. They're doing some wonderful things at the Pathways to Hope conference, aren't they?
They are, yes. Doug Beach and his team are doing great things in the San Antonio area.
Yes, in fact, I have a podcast interview scheduled with him coming up soon. So we're going to talk about Pathways to Hope, but let's just, as two pastors, talk right now about just mental health and the faith community. Tell me about what you see as the struggles or the difficulties and the power of how, when faith is involved in recovery, what you're seeing.
Well, I think one of the things I often see is the wrestle between spiritual disciplines and coming to grips with a illness that sometimes spiritual disciplines like prayer, maybe fasting, maybe reading the Bible, that sometimes those things that have brought many over. Sometimes depression and anxiety, psychosis, substance use disorders often seem to really cause persons to not feel like they can actually get over those humps. And I often hear people tell me, often I've prayed, I've done all these things, and it just seems like God is not hearing me, or mm-hmm. like I can't get better. And, you know, I'm constantly reminding them that recovery is a journey. And
right.
that it's not a straight line, and that is a lot of zigzags in it. And that, you know, our faith is one of those elements in our recovery that can help us. But we have to have other elements like support groups and like medication and therapy and that. All
right.
these things together help us to make it. But I think the challenge becomes when faith communities tell people that all they need is that one element of just their faith practice.
Yeah.
to recover.
Yeah. Do you find that that's a struggle for a lot of pastors to accept the fact that people may need medicine?
I think for some it is. And I think that may come with either a lack of training around mental illness and knowing how mental illness is treated. I think also there's that stigma that, you know, you can see a broken arm, you can see a broken leg, but when it comes down to the issues that come from mental health challenges, persons look at that only as being the behaviors that just should be modified or changed,
mm-hmm.
and not as a true illness. And so I think that the dilemma for many faith leaders is, how do I talk about mental illness in a way that still, for some faith communities, validate that God does do miraculous things, or that God can heal, or that, you know, people mm-hmm. Through prayer, they can find, you know, some kind of sense of recovery. I think it's, you know, what our hope is with Pathways to to hope is to really provide pastors and leaders those tools they need in order to have that conversation. Because that's what it starts with, is a conversation of, hey, recovery is possible. A long journey, but possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find that there's a lot of folks that struggle in the faith community at thinking, oh, I shouldn't take medicine for this, or I don't need to take medicine for it, and yet they don't think about their brain being another organ in their body that's just as broken as the rest of the body?
Yeah, you know, I often, you know, joke about how sometimes doctor gives you an antibiotic and says, take it for 10 days. You start feeling better in day 5, and you start taking the antibiotic. And, you know, it sits in the medicine cabinet. And, you know, that's kind of how some people are with regards to medication. They take it to, you know, it has worked or made some of the symptoms go away, and they put it down. And so, you know, I've actually had some pastors who thankfully are telling people, take your medication, you know, as you would for diabetes or as you would for hypertension.
Right.
But then, unfortunately, there are some pastors I have heard say things like, you don't need any medication, just have faith.
Yeah.
And I think that does a disservice to many people who are struggling, trying to find a way. And I do think we have to be very clear that medication is not the cure-all or the thing that's going to make everything better.
Right.
That it is a combination of medication and therapy and support groups like Fresh Hope. It's that combination of things that persons need to do and not just one or the other.
Right, right. I like your illustration of the idea of there's a lot of us that take antibiotics and oh, I hate it when they tell you, you got to take this for 2 weeks, you know. It's kind of like stuff for athlete's foot, you know. You got to use that past the time it goes away. And I am just not disciplined enough. That's why my doctor always gives me a Z-Pack where it's like 5 days. That's it, you know, and it's one pill or whatever, because I usually won't finish it. And that's really true. That's how many people handle the mental health medicines or the medicines that help our brains. Yeah, definitely. What are some of the things you guys are doing to help facilitate the faith community and the mental health community to connect or to have that bridge, that, you know, that pathway between the two?
Well, you know, one of the things I encourage all congregations that come to us for help is to do a needs assessment, you know, to actually verify what you think may be a need in your congregation. So we, on our website, which we'll talk about a little later, on our website, we have tons of resources where persons can come and download the needs assessment first. So once they download that needs assessment and determine what kind of education needs their congregation have to increase mental health literacy, and the next step we encourage them is becoming educated around what those needs are, be that, you know, education around what depression is or what anxiety is or their illnesses. But then the third step we encourage folks to do is, once you become educated, form some kind of team, some kind of group that comes together that's continually educated, and they can share that with other congregation members.
Right.
So, you know, ways we often say, you know, this three-pronged strategy is assessment, education, and the implementation of what you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing is many of these resources are actually at no cost on our website because of generous contributions that we receive to our organization. So they can get a good start with material that is at no cost to them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, so that's with the congregation. What about with the pastors? What do you have in regards to that?
So the program is called Companionship, and there are 5 principles or practices, if you would, of hospitality we bring side by side, listening and a compliment. And this is a 3-hour training we take not only pastors through, but other persons through, to truly know how to walk alongside someone with a mental illness.
Mm.
And so, because that really is the journey. And we draw from the Good Samaritan story, you know, where there's a stranger on the side of the road who who need somebody to stop and provide assistance and recognize his humanity, that he's in need of help. Mm. So that becomes the foundational story of this training of how do we be a neighbor to those persons who need someone who is in distress.
Yes.
And so what we've been working with is just the language around suffering. And because oftentimes that can be stigmatizing, persons suffering with mental illness. And so what we've been doing is we've been talking about using the word more distress, because mm-hmm. there are different levels of distress. Mm-hmm. And I think distress levels the playing field. And it says, if somebody is in distress, how do you help that person?
Yes.
And so that's what we've been trying to do, so that we don't have to stigmatize a language that keeps folks from actually, one, asking for help, or people from extending themselves to offer that help.
Yes, which makes a lot of sense. Now, talk to me just a little bit about the first aid, mental health first aid course that you teach, or that and I know that's separate of Pathways. Is that correct?
It is.
Before I forget, we probably should maybe, let's give that website that you were talking about where they could go for the resources for Pathways before we move on to this next thing, just to make sure. So give us that website.
So Pathways website is pathways2promise.org.
Say that again for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Pathways, plural, Pathways, the number two, promise.org. And so instead of T-O, it's actually the number two. So Pathways2promise.org.
Okay, so Pathways2promise.org. And that's where you can find the resources that Jermaine was just speaking about. Now, let's talk a little bit about the mental health first aid. I am a novice when it comes to this. I just conceptually get it a little bit. But talk to us about that, because that's something, if I have a diagnosis or other people in our church maybe are interested in mental health, this would be something a church could host. Is that correct?
That's correct. So mental health first aid is an eight-hour training. I've been fortunate to be one of the original trainers for mental health first aid, started back in 2008. So it's been a 10-year journey for me. And what persons actually learn in mental health first aid is how to help a person experiencing a mental health challenge or in a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. And that help is offered until appropriate treatment is received or until the crisis is resolved. And so what persons learn in this 8 hours is not how to diagnose someone, but how to recognize warning signs and symptoms, and then how to initiate help. And so those are the key things. How do I recognize someone who may be in distress? How do I recognize somebody who may be explaining to me what they're feeling and encourage them to then get the help they need? And so in mental health first aid, there's this action plan that we call ALGI. And it's just a five-step plan. And the A stands for assess for risk of suicide or harm. The L stands for listen non-judgmentally. The G stands for give reassurance and information. And the last two E's stand for encourage appropriate professional help. And the last E is encourage self-help and other support strategies. So that action plan is taught to individuals then to, if someone's in a crisis, if someone's developing a mental health challenge, use these tools to help that person.
Yeah.
So in 8 hours, they would have learned warning signs for depression, for anxiety, for psychosis, for substance use disorder, mm-hmm. and that FOSTA action plan to help somebody in non-crisis or crisis situations.
Yep.
So that's mental health first aid in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, and who couldn't use that? I mean, that ought to be like CPR classes and things like that, that people get just the basics that they know how to do when they run into somebody with this, that's in distress.
We have trained, since 2008, we've trained over 1 million people in mental health first aid.
Oh, wow.
We have about 13,000 instructors around the country, including over in the Virgin Islands, over in Guam. And so we have in the adult model, we have both adult course, we have an adult model And then we have a youth model also for adults who work with youth 12 to 17 of age. And what's been great with the adult model is we've been able to develop modules for law enforcement, for veterans, for higher education, for older adults. And we've even launched a new one for EMT and firefighters. And we have this in Spanish also. So Mental Health First Aid has been a real blessing to me, because if it wasn't for that training, I don't think I could have been able to have the skills to help my mom, who has severe depression, or even my son, who lives with depression. And so the tools I've gleaned from that training program truly was the first aid I needed in those circumstances.
Yeah, cool. If somebody's listening to this and would like to bring it to their area or to host something like that, where do they go, or how do they sign up or find out more?
They can go to mentalhealthfirstaid.org. And so they just go into their browser, put mentalhealthfirstaid.org. And then there is a area that says find a course in my area. They put the zip code in there, and with the zip code, they can choose a radius of how many miles within that zip code.
Okay.
And they can find a training being offered in their community. So it's really simple. Just mentalhealthfirstaid.org.
Yeah. Great. Now, you have a website that people can go to also to find out more about your work that you do, correct? JermaineAlberty.com, right?
Yeah, it is JermaineAlberty.com.
Alberty is ALBERTY.com. And it's Jermaine with an I. So it's JermaineAlberty.com. You can find out more about Jermaine's work there. What are some of your newest projects or special things that you're involved in right now, that your maybe new initiatives or things like that?
Well, I'm so excited. A co-author and I just released a book this year called Bottle Inside, African-American Teens and Depression. And
what's the name again?
It's called Bottled Up Inside.
Okay.
Yeah, Bottled Up Inside, African-American Teens and Depression. And this book is available on Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble. And the book is designed to provide persons with content around what depression is. We discussed the risk factor of trauma as well as the protective factor of spirituality. But we also, in that book, I tell a story of my son when he attempted suicide back in November of 2015. And that was his first suicide attempt. He had multiple attempts after that. And I share in this book an intervention strategy that I developed to help my son. And the word actually is help. And what I discovered in helping my son was I had to first hear him to engage him and then learn from him in order to plan with him. And so I talk about this in this book, this strategy called help, which is hear, engage, learn, plan. And so in that book, we have some case studies where persons can read those case studies on youth and then use that intervention strategy, how they would help that young person.
Wow. This is specifically, the book is about African-American teens and depression, you said, right?
Yeah, I found this book to be helpful for a lot of people.
Oh, I can't imagine why it wouldn't be, you know. Yeah. I always tell people, and Jermaine is African-American, I always tell people, we're all the same race. We're not a different race, you know, just shade tones of skin color, that we could all be lined up and some of us would be very close to the other person. And but in regards to that, and it could be a politically sensitive topic, but it's hard for the faith community itself to just get its arms around mental health issues. But there seems to be even more possibly of a struggle for the African-American community. Do you find that to be true, or because I hear that a lot?
Yeah, I do. I find it to be true because when you've had people who've dealt with historical trauma for centuries,
yes,
there's a resiliency that has been built up that I think is great. But I also think that resiliency keeps us from getting the help we need.
Yes.
And so because of the strength that we often have, we just look at depression as just another issue and we'll just get over it. What we fail to realize oftentimes is that these illnesses can be treatable, but we have to first recognize that they are illnesses. But I do have to then discuss that there is, of course, this distrust in the medical system.
Yes.
Because people have been experimented on, and there has been history of persons of color not been treated equitably in the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to avoid being labeled, because who needs another label that will prevent them from getting jobs or prevent them from getting entry into other things? So I think it's a catch 22
right.
of getting the help I need, but then not being labeled. So I think we have to break that stigma mm-hmm. and then increase that literacy as we have with cancer and other illnesses.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I think there's things that I, as a white man, I simply do not comprehend at times or understand, because we all think that while we grew up in the same country, we've all had the same experiences. And even just knowing from the Trauma Healing Institute of the American Bible Society, bottom line is there can be generational trauma, and trauma can be passed on from generation to generation. And that's something some of us just don't get, you know. Now, if you were raised by a mother who maybe had trauma because she was sexually abused while she was growing up, and you understand how that trauma gets passed down, then you might get it. But there's a lot of things we just don't get many times. And that whole trauma piece is a big deal.
Absolutely. It really is. And as you know, it is one of the most powerful predictors of mental illness.
Yeah.
Having a traumatic experience. And we all perceive trauma differently. You know, what's traumatic for one man, for the other. But I do think having clinicians that are informed of the historical trauma experienced by African Americans and taking that into account, that paranoia and suspiciousness of one's surroundings is not a symptom all the time, but mm-hmm. a reality of life for many people.
Yep. Yeah. I've been working in our local Douglas County jail here in Omaha, and going there every week for the last 2 years, and we've developed a kind of like a Fresh Hope approach to helping people understand emotional health and spiritual health and how they tie together. And I've also become involved with becoming a trauma healing facilitator. And I am always shocked at the high level of trauma that most of the folks have had who are in jail. And it just pains me, because a lot of my friends just make harsh judgments about people's behaviors and their struggles. And they don't understand that if we don't really deal with people's trauma and help people work through the trauma, many of the patterns are just going to continue in their life, because they're trying to deal with pain, and it can be generational pain. And if that pain isn't dealt with, it's like trying to hold huge beach balls that have been greased up with Crisco under the water. And if you deal with the trauma, you can let the air out of the beach ball. Otherwise, you just try to hold it under and it's going to pop up. You're not going to hold all of those, you know, ongoing. And so the whole trauma piece is so important in people's recovery, isn't it?
It is so important. And I think the reality is, and until we really truly look at, you know, true rehabilitation, true restoration, you know, of people, then housing people in prison is a whole other podcast. It's not going to resolve many of the issues. But I do know that, you know, a lot of this is rooted in trauma. hurt people, as we've heard, sometimes hurt other people.
Yes.
Because they don't know how to get the healing they need.
Yep.
And I think that's the significant part of faith communities also, not only preaching that message of hope for salvation for a hereafter, but actually hope and a salvation for now.
And God's redemption of your pain and working through your pain and your difficulties and finding new ways of dealing with stress and hurt and pain, which, like you said, we should do another podcast on this topic. By the way, yeah, that would be a whole great another podcast for sure, right?
It would be.
Because I think those of us in the white communities need to understand there is trauma, and it really doesn't have much to do with color of skin at all. It has to do with poverty. It just the trauma from not having resources and things like that. That those of us who grew up just in the average American white family, not even white. I should take that out of the. It's just average. Middle-income families, we don't get what happens when there's severe poverty as well as...
Well, we know that a protective factor for young people is economic security. And economic security does not necessarily always mean, per se, someone with lots of money. What it does mean, though, is that, excuse me, the kind of Maslow hierarchy of needs,
mm-hmm.
if you would.
Yep.
That those basic general needs of where do I lay my head, if I'm going to eat, if I'm going to have, you know, shelter, food, clothing, just those basic needs. When those needs are not met, it can create opportunities for, of course, anxiety, mm-hmm. and also opportunities for depression. And then the question becomes often, how does one self-medicate mm-hmm. to deal with that anxiety or that depression? And oftentimes... Excuse me. It is alcohol and drugs that are used
right.
to self-medicate for some of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in many minority communities, you will find more drug stores, liquor stores, if you would, in those communities than you do in other communities. And so,
yes.
as we said, this could be a whole different show if we could deal with the poverty and deal with some of those other risk factors that put people at risk. I think that, once again, it goes back, though, to our faith community and how do we embrace our role as a social gospel of dealing with the societal ills and redemption and restoration of people. That's important. And so I think it all links back to the whole idea of mental health
yes.
and wellness.
Yes.
And that's one of the things I've been challenging people is that, you know, the word mental illness can be stigmatizing, but the word mental health should not be. It is simply, how do we maintain our emotional wellness? You know, how do we maintain wellness in that area?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's good mental health, and then there's mental health is not so good.
Right, right. Everybody's got mental something. It's either health or it's not too good.
Well, that's why I love the definition of the word mental health challenge, because what that mm-hmm. defined as is simply person who may experience symptoms that are not severe enough to warrant a diagnosis.
Right.
So what that says is everyone has a mental health challenge.
Yes.
We all experience some kind of symptoms, but those symptoms may not be severe enough to warrant a diagnosis. And so we all experience stress of some kind. And so,
yep.
I use one analogy of when you lose your keys, what happens to you? Your body goes into immediately, you know, this
yep.
heightened level of anxiety.
Well, even your phone, that would be even worse, right?
Oh my goodness. I lost my phone just yesterday. And I was thinking, oh my God, what do I do? How can I call people? So losing a phone, losing keys can put you in such a heightened stress of anxiety.
Yep.
And I go as simple as losing a shoe. Losing yep. a shoe.
yep, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, when we think about the fact that all these different things can heighten our anxiety, could cause us to feel depressed, then we all are at risk of developing possibly a mental illness. But the reality is, because of support systems that we have around us, coping mechanisms that we have established, those things may help us maintain wellness.
And the faith community can be that for folks.
Absolutely.
With sensitivity training, with some minimal understanding, really. It just takes friendship. It just takes a relationship. Yeah. I find that the people who really struggle to recover, as I watch and we work within our groups, the people who really, really struggle are the people who live alone. It's so much harder. And if there's no, you know, no family, no, you know, in many cases, kids help you. It may be its own burden, but if you struggle with a mental health challenge, the fact that your kids have to get to school and certain things have to happen, that keeps you going. But when you're all alone, and it's so easy to get stuck in your head at that point.
Research just came out that said that loneliness is now one of the worst epidemics than obesity.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we think about the detriment of loneliness to our health, that's why we need faith communities really to gather around. And I often tell my congregation, if you don't see somebody on a Sunday morning, if you don't see somebody if it's at the temple on Saturday, if you don't see somebody, call, ask them, are they okay? I mean, it's just that simple check-in.
Absolutely.
I didn't see you. Is everything okay?
Yeah.
You know, that has been neighbor one to the other.
Yeah.
That really is.
Yeah. Well, like I said at the beginning, you and I could probably talk for a day or two and not cover any of the same subjects, or just talk in circles, one of the two. But I really, really appreciate you spending time with me. Would you mind just talking to somebody that's listening that's maybe discouraged or frustrated? Maybe they themselves have the mental health challenge, or they live with someone who does. Could you just speak hope into their situation?
I would love to. I just want that person to know that, one, that recovery, even though it is a long, hard, arduous journey at times, it is possible. But it's not possible by yourself. It begins with hope. It begins with the hope that recovery is possible. And so I would encourage you to talk to somebody who you trust and let them know how you are feeling and what you are experiencing. And let that person know, I need your help. And that becomes the beginning, just reaching out your hand saying, hey, I need your help. And I promise you, there are people out there that want to help, but just don't know that you need their help. And so continue to pray, continue to trust God, continue to do those things, but know that we are here to be help one to the other. And so I would encourage you just to extend your hand. My prayer, somebody will take your hand, and not only your hand, but your arm, and walk with you.
Yep. Would you mind closing us with a word of prayer?
I would love to. We give thanks for opportunity anytime to come before a gracious and loving God. And we just pray that a peace and comfort that surpasses our understanding will be with those who hear this podcast, and that they will know that we are called to love one another. For the greatest commandment is for us to love God and love our neighbor as ourselves. So help us to be peace, love, and joy one to the other. Amen.
Amen. Again, thank you so much, Jermaine. And the websites are Pathway to Promise. Or is it Promises? Pathway to Promise?
Yeah. PathwaysToPromise.org, JermaineAlberti.com. And I mentioned companionship earlier in the podcast, and that website is thecompanionshipmovement.org. So
okay.
Those three sites are PathwaysToPromise.org, JermaineAlberti.com, and thecompanionshipmovement.org.
And also, the name of your book again?
Is Bottle Up Inside, African Americans and Depression.
And that's available at any bookstore or through Amazon, right?
Amazon and Barnes & Noble, yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. Also, thank you to those of you who are listening to this podcast. We thank the Lord for you. If you'd like to ever talk with us about maybe your mental health challenge, or if you want to know about resources that we have through Fresh Hope or Pathways to Promise or other places, we'd be happy to connect you and intersect, if you will, or help you and walk alongside of you as is possible. We'd really like to hear from you. Feel free to email us questions, insights, maybe a topic that you'd like to see us cover or share on this podcast. And of course, you can follow us on social media and all of those places. And would you mind doing me a favor, though? If you're listening to us on Apple or on iTunes, would you please make sure to write a review? It doesn't, just a short little review of the podcast. It helps others find us through iTunes. And of course, we have groups around the country, as well as we have Fresh Hope Online. And you can find out more about that on our website at www.freshhope.us. Freshhope.us. Until next time, may the Lord hold you with his hope fresh and new daily. I'm Brad Hafes, and this has been another edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health.
You've been listening to Fresh Hope for Mental Health. If you have an opportunity, please review, share, and subscribe to the Fresh Hope for Mental Health podcast on iTunes or on the service that you use. We encourage you to share our podcast on social media with your friends and family. Previous podcasts of Fresh Hope for Mental Health can be found at freshhopeformentalhealth.com, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes. The Fresh Hope for Mental Health podcast is part of Fresh Hope. Fresh Hope is an international network of Christian mental health peer support groups, which empower people to live well in spite of having a mental health diagnosis. For more information about Fresh Hope, go to freshhope.us. Fresh Hope is one of the leading networks of faith-based peer support groups internationally. Our host, Brad Hafes, is founder and president of Fresh Hope. He is a pastor who is living well in spite of having bipolar disorder. Brad is the author of the book Fresh Hope for Living Well, which is available at Amazon.com. Brad is also a speaker, blogger, hope coach, and mental health advocate. You can find more out about Brad by going to bradhafes.com. Hafes is spelled H-O-E-F-S. If you or someone you know is interested in attending a Fresh Hope group meeting, go to freshhope.us and click on Find a Group. Not only do we have local groups, but we also offer Fresh Hope groups online also. If you're interested in starting a Fresh Hope group in your community, email us at info@freshhope.us.